manhunt, tracking Brian Laundrie after his fiance Gabby Petito is confirmed dead by the FBI. John Walsh, the man who's helped collar more than 1,400 fugitives during his long career, joins me live tonight. Can he help bring justice to Gabby's family? Also tonight, 3.5 years after the trip and fall death of the Murdoch family housekeeper, the receipts have surfaced, over $4 million worth, and they're signed by a judge. So where is the money? Tonight on Banfield. Welcome to Banfield. It is the outcome that none of us wanted to hear. The FBI confirming that the body found on Sunday in Grand Teton National Park, Wyoming, is, in fact, 22-year-old Gabby Petito. The manner of death? Homicide. The cause of death? The time of death? Don't know that yet. Who helped maybe kill her? Well, let's hope we're closing in on that. But the only person who might have some answers, might know for sure what happened to Gabby, Brian Laundrie. And he's been no help. Actually went AWOL a week ago tonight. Police have focused their manhunt for Brian in an alligator-infested nature reserve called the Miakahatchee Creek Environmental Park. It's in Northport, Florida. And although they called off that hunt yesterday, they were right back out there again today. His parents claim that he went hiking there a week ago, but that he never returned. Odd that they didn't tell the police that until 3 days later. About Gabby, though, they've offered no statements, nothing, just nothing of substance, and nor have they helped in the investigation to locate her. Now, some of the social media posts of this couple that once seemed to show such a happy couple, so in love, well, they have certainly taken on a more ominous tone, like this engagement photo that was posted by Laundrie in July of last year, which includes the phrase, "Till death do us part," or "until I wake up." I want to bring in News Nation's Brian Enten, who's standing live right now outside of the Laundrie family home, which has been the center of it all, it seems, for the last 2 weeks, and is a crime scene. So, Brian, you had a chance to get up in the air and get a really big, broad view of what exactly authorities are doing in Northport. Can you let me know about that?
Yeah, Ashley, you know, it's quiet outside the house tonight, but really the action today was at the Carlton Reserve. That's the big wildlife reserve you were talking about. 24,000 acres. That is massive. That is bigger than Walt Disney World. That is bigger than Manhattan. Just to give you an idea, we went up in the helicopter this afternoon, went over the reserve. I knew it was big, but when you get up above it and you see it and you basically see the swamp just go as far as the eye can see, you realize that they are really just looking for a needle in a haystack right now. And 75% of this reserve is covered in water and alligators and snakes. So these police officers are really risking a lot going out there. They're in ATVs and swamp buggies looking for any sign of Brian Laundrie.
That would be a really hard place to walk if you're on foot. There they are in those ATVs, and they're half tire up in mud and water. It would be really bizarre for someone to spend a whole lot of time in there, especially in the dark and cold of night. That which takes me to another place, Brian. You know, here we are looking at the park in Northport, but a long way away in Baker, Florida, 500 miles from where you're standing, there's a man whose deer cam caught an ominous image at night. I want to put the picture up for you because a lot of people are saying it looks a whole lot like Brian Laundrie. Do we know anything about that deer cam shot and that man with the backpack that looks a lot like Brian's backpack, too?
Yeah, this is Okaloosa County, Florida, about 7.5 hours from where we're standing right now. when the person who has this wildlife cam put this photo out, it went crazy on social media today. Finally, the Okaloosa County Sheriff put out a statement. When they received this picture, they actually sent a drone up over that area, searched the area of wildlife, the wildlife area where the picture came from, and then they sent officers on foot. They say they found nothing. They say that Brian Laundrie has no connection to that area. But, Ashley, they did not go as far as to say we are for sure that this picture is not Brian Laundrie.
Hmm. Well, that's interesting, because it is suspicious at that time of night to just be walking along with a small backpack slung over. Real quickly, behind you, Brian, the house where we have no idea if Brian Laundrie ever actually spent much time before he went on the lam. But we have pictures now from the New York Post showing the inside of that house, and they got it courtesy of Realtor.com. I guess they listed that house, took some pictures, and we have the picture of Brian Laundrie's bedroom. In that bedroom, Brian, you can see what looks like a gun. There's a Darth Vader helmet, Watchmen graphic novels, violent comics, and also a poster that depicts pretty violent images. Are the police saying anything about what they found in that bedroom? And can you, by any chance, point out where that is in the house from where your vantage point is? I'm not sure if you can even see it or if you even know which of those rooms is behind you.
So we think his house is on the other side. The way things are set up here, we'll have to walk around, but just bear with me for a second. We're in the neighbor's yard, but since yesterday, they've actually opened things up a bit. It's still a crime scene. They've still got the house taped off, but we can, I think, get to a vantage point where you can see the house better. Just come over this crime scene tape, Louise. You see they've got an officer out here. Ashley, they have officers outside the house at all times. And this is actually the front of the house. This is Mr. Laundrie's pickup truck you see here in front of the camper. The front door. To the left of the door, we actually think that's the kitchen, which is interesting. You wouldn't expect it, but based on the photos we found online. And then to the left of that, that window you see there on the left, we think that that might be Brian Laundrie's bedroom where those pictures came from. No way to know for sure, obviously, since we can't go in the house, but that does appear to be the room, Ashley.
And Brian, I'm just assuming that those, you know, blinds that are shuttered and the windows that are closed, it's just been like that since the get-go when the media all showed up. You can't see any action in that house, can you?
No action, which has been strange since the beginning. I didn't think anyone was here in the beginning because these people are living in the dark. It's a 1,400-square-foot home. And they haven't had a light on in almost a week. At night, they turn no lights on. I'm thinking they must be like in an interior room with a small light on, because the other night we walked around three sides of the house that we could just to see if there was even a glimmer of light coming out, and we couldn't see anything.
Possible that they are spending their time in a basement. This is not a good time to be a laundry. That is for sure. Not a good time to be Brian Laundrie, and certainly not a good time to be the parents who were no help at all to the story of missing, now dead, Gabby Petito. Brian Enten, you have done such incredible work out there. Thank you so much for all that you've been doing. I hope you get some rest at some point, but fantastic work. Thanks.
Thanks, Ashley.
Okay, so I want to welcome back to the show somebody who really knows how to find people who do not want to be found. It's the host of Investigation Discovery's In Pursuit with John Walsh. He is a veteran of the business of catching bad guys. He knows how to do it because he's done it more than 1,000 times, almost 2,000 times. John Walsh, I just want to ask you about the revelation today that the coroner has determined that the manner of death for Gabby Petito is in fact homicide. It means it was not a bear. It means she did not fall. It means that she did not overdose with drugs. It means man killed her. A person killed her. Does this do a lot in terms of advancing the case and advancing the manhunt?
Well, absolutely. I mean, not every missing woman is found. I know lots and lots of families that have had missing kids and missing adults over the years, and the not knowing is the worst. So the best thing happened is that we found her body. And thank God for that blogger, that travel blogger who drove by and took the picture of the van while he was probably dumping her body. And then we found out yesterday that he tried to hitch a ride back to that van, and the people giving him the ride were going the wrong way. So he got all frantic and jumped out of the car heading back to where the van was. And he gave them too much information. But it's a good thing that they found the body. They'll work on the body. And it removes Brian from this stupid semantic person of interest thing to what you and I kept saying to you, is that he's the only suspect. And he was the only person of interest. So now they're looking for him for a murder. And that changed everything on Tuesday, because last Friday, you and I talked about the implication of his parents, the Dirty Laundries, and their lawyer, Bertolino, calling the police on Friday and saying, well, on Tuesday, Brian left in his Mustang and he went to this swamp where he goes to meditate. I wish 2 weeks ago he'd come in and meditated with the police and told them where he dropped Gabby. But anyway, they said they went out there on a Wednesday and found his car. I don't know how you find a car like that in a 25,000-acre preserve, but they left him a note. Mommy left him a note saying, Brian, if you're going to hurt yourself or you need help, we're here for you. Then they told police through their lawyer, Bertolino, Johnny Cochran-style lawyer, that they went out there and took the car. When they went out and the note wasn't gone, and then on Thursday they brought the car back. Now, there's several neighbors that are saying that couldn't be true because we saw that Mustang on Tuesday and Wednesday in the car, in the driveway. But so they tell police, Bertolino tells the police on Friday, I'm going to do the right thing. And we're going to do the right thing. The Dirty Laundries have changed their mind, and they were going to say Brian's gone. So they're worried about Brian. He might kill himself. But you know what they did, Ashley? They bought Brian 4 days. They had the cops spinning their wheels. They had nobody knowing what really was going on. So they gave him 4 more days. And you said it at the top of the hour, Ashley. You and I were talking about this, and I don't know if people know you worked for me at America's Most Wanted for years. You're a terrific reporter. But anyway, that he may have left after he came home. He came home and hung around for 10 days, never telling Gabby's parents that were his friends. Gabby used to live in the house when they were engaged with the Dirty Laundries. But they never told Gabby's parents they were home, so they filed a missing report after 10 days. I think he started the run way back then, because I have to ask an important question, Ashley. Do you know a reporter at Fox or CNN or at your channel or New York Times or anybody that attended or the Wall Street Journal or anybody that attended the various BS press conferences that could confirm that they saw Brian Laundry in that house?
Not one.
The cops bought it through the lawyer, through Bertolino, the wannabe Johnny Cochran OJ guy. And they took his word for it. The Northport police and the FBI took a half-assed lawyer's word that Brian went out there to meditate and that they're worried about him in the swamp and they've got his car and they thought they ought to call him. They've been buying this kid time to get away. You know, the other night when I was on your show, the tips doubled the next morning. I mean, the phone's been ringing off the hook. People have been texting, calling our hotline. And we had 10 very, very good tips, which we turned over to the U.S. Marshals and the FBI. People even said they thought they saw him in Portugal and Italy. So I'm saying this guy, this kid, this sociopath punk that I always believe killed her, and I know you did too, and most of America, has had plenty of time to make a run with the help and support of his parents and the lawyer. Now, everything changed when he became the suspect in a homicide. So if the lawyer and the mother have been helping him all week and the father to get ahead, now they got an answer to that. And I think that's why they canceled the press conference last night when Bertolino and the FBI had a little talk. And I think they said to him, you've been lying to us from day one.
So, John, with regard to those tips, I have to fit in a quick break. But when we come back, I want to ask you more about tips, because if there's anyone who knows about tips, it's you. The tip line is on the screen, 833-378-7783. John's already had tips. The FBI are getting tips. More than 1,000 tips have come in. After the break, I'm going to ask John, how do you sort through those tips for the good ones? And how do you know when they're bad? We are back with John Walsh right after. The incomparable John Walsh, the host of In Pursuit on Investigation Discovery, whose program on the Gabby Petito story will air tomorrow night, is with me live. John, I have always wondered how you and your staff sort through the thousands and thousands of tips that you've received over the years, and how the FBI is sorting through the more than 1,000 tips that have come in this case. How do you find the good ones, and how do you know the stinkers?
Well, first of all, it's experience. Many of the hotline operators that I have worked for me for 25 years on America's Most Wanted. Then when you were at CNN, I was there on The Hunt with that show for a small time. And now I'm right where I belong on ID. And we've been here 3 years. So I have many tip line operators that have worked for me 28 years. So they're really good. And the cops always tell me they're better than the cops because we don't run tip lines. The FBI doesn't run a tip line permanently. They do it per case by case. But we're very good at weeding them out. We know when the bad guy's calling himself and saying, oh, you know that bad guy, he's in Key Largo, Florida, when they're calling from Wisconsin. So, you know, we've gotten good over the years. We've gotten really good. And I have the same hotline supervisor that I've had for years. And the cops know it. They know it. I mean, they always say to me, you caught over 1,400 guys, 17 guys off the FBI's 10 most wanted, and recovered 61 missing kids. That's not me bragging. That's because the public helped me. People don't want to call the FBI. Yeah. I tell people, call me. I don't trace or tap the phone. I don't care if you're legal, illegal, where you are, whether, you know, what your name is. You just tell me where the dirt bag is and I'll go get him. Now, the FBI, people don't trust cops. They're afraid to call cops. Cops will drag them into the cases. Sometimes they get hurt in revenge because defense attorneys find out who the tipster was. No, not on my show, not on In Pursuit. You just call. I don't need to know anything about you. Just have the courage to get up off the couch and call me if you think you've seen this guy.
And let me make sure I say that tip line again, 833-378-7783. John's show is tomorrow night. He's working hard to find Brian Laundrie. Real quickly, you know, Brian Laundrie is well known. It is established that he is an arduous and very skilled outdoorsman and camper. And that reminded me of a man named Eric Rudolph, who spent 5 years on the run camping in the Appalachians in the wilderness after an abortion clinic bombing and the Olympic Park bombing. Are you concerned that this is the kind of thing that Brian Laundrie may be able to do as well, you know, following the footsteps of Eric Rudolph?
Eric Rudolph is a great example. FBI top 10. I went down to the command center down there. They had FLIR, the heat-seeking devices. But what was confusing in those North Carolina woods were the bears and the animals and all that type of stuff. But we caught him. We got a tip because the guy that was bringing him food in the woods was his cocaine dealer. That guy died of a heart attack. He came in and started taking food out of a dumpster. We got a direct call to America's Most Wanted. But what I'm saying about this guy, Brian, he's a little different. This guy is ruthless. He's smart as heck. I don't think he has the courage. He's narcissistic. I don't think he has the courage to kill himself, which would be a blessing for the DePeto family because they wouldn't have to sit in court and look at the photos of Gabby. And it would be a blessing to the Dirty Laundries, too, because he's not going to do well in prison. They're going to really hate this guy in prison when they get him. But the tips are essential. And I wanted to say one thing because I know you have to go. When I have not heard one reporter ask the law enforcement about if they've seen and verified when we do captures in the Middle East and stuff, it's proof of life. All that lawyer had to do was get Brian next to him, put today's paper with a picture and give it to the cops. Nobody wanted to talk to him and break, you know, ruin his Fifth Amendment rights. That's not the thing. But here's what my question is. They're out in this swamp spending hundreds of thousands of dollars with all kinds of law enforcement, a little bit too late. But all it would have taken, Ashley, was a black and white car on the street in front of his house, in the street, which is public property, a black and white on the street behind him, a undercover surveillance car. So when his father took out the pickup truck, maybe with Brian on the floor in the back, they could follow that pickup truck, and if Brian got out, they would arrest him. That was that simple. That doesn't cost the taxpayers anything. So there's a lot of questions for the FBI and for the Northport Police.
That's called a stakeout. You know, stakeout.
Here's a stakeout. It doesn't violate anybody's civil liberties whatsoever. He was the only suspect. Name another person of interest. He was in the house. I went to bed one night and say, now they found his body. They're going to arrest him tomorrow. But you answer this for me, Ashley. How did that little weasel get out of that house without those cops seeing him?
It's the question we all have, and there's a lot of scrutiny for the police. When we come back after the break, I have one more question for you, John. It's an important one because you're the best in the business at this, and you've been through it yourself. I want to ask you after the break what advice you have for Gabby's family in terms of how they can help the next phase, bringing whoever did this to their daughter to justice. We're back with John Walsh right after the break. John Walsh, the host of In Pursuit on Investigation Discovery, my host tonight, the man who's caught over 1,400 fugitives and now has his eyes and sights set on Brian Laundrie on his program tomorrow night. John, what advice do you have for Gabby Petito's family who are going through so much heartbreak right now but have another phase, and that is to find the person who did this to their daughter and bring that person to justice? What would you tell them?
I would tell them a lot of things, and I would say to the dad first, because the dad that they are now, this whole family belongs to the horrible worst club in America that I belong to, parents of murdered children. And dads always take it bad because we got that macho testosterone and we're always thinking about getting even. And when Adam was kidnapped, 6 years old, 1981, worst 2 weeks of my life till they found his severed head in a canal, was the searching and the not knowing. They at least know what happened to Gabby, and they know that the dirtbag that's out there. And, you know, I was building a hotel. I was a hotel builder, and I had three partners. We were building our lifetime project, a $26 million hotel on Paradise Island when Adam was kidnapped. I never went back to the hotel business. I lost my company. I lost 30 pounds. I was set on vengeance to find out who killed Adam so I could have them killed or kill them myself. And I learned that's not the way to go. While I was doing that, my wife started the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, which is now 450 employees in Washington, D.C., five branches. So something really good came out of Adam's death, and we wanted to make sure he didn't die in vain. So I say to the family, if you want to call me, reach out to me. I have been there. I have been there, and you're going to come to some rough times. You're going to have to go through the roughest trial you've ever heard of in your life because it'll be your own daughter. But you've got to think of all the joy that beautiful girl. Look at her. She's 100 pounds of beautiful, loving girl. Think of all the wonderful days, not the one day when you found out that she had been murdered, but think about all that joy. And finding this guy, all the joy she brought you, but finding this guy is crucial. It's not about closure, Ashley. I never had closure, and it took me 27 years to get the files from away from the Hollywood, Florida police and expose the mistakes they had. They had the suspect in 84, Otis Toole, a serial pedophile, and they had to let him go because they bundled the case so badly and covered it up for years. Toole went on to spend 70 more years roaming the country killing children until we got the files in after 27. I mean, he spent 20 some years roaming the country. We got the files after 27 years, and it wasn't about closure. Your heart will always be broken. It was about justice, and that's what this family needs right now. Brian Dirty Laundrie needs to be caught. He needs to be prosecuted, and they need to see that Gabby gets justice, and then they can end that chapter of their life and try to move on. They'll never be the same. They'll always have that open wound in their heart. Birthdays and holidays open it, and it bleeds more. Some days are better than others, but it's not about closure. It's about staying together and being nice to each other, loving each other, and celebrating Gabby's life, and about getting closure so they can close that door and say that Brian Laundrie is right where he belongs, on death row somewhere, or life without prison forever. So that's what's going to be important. And if the family wants to reach out to me, they can. They're hurting right now terribly. They're dealing with this horrible ending to this journey. But I'm there, and I don't know if I'll catch this guy, but the tips are pouring in. The social media world has blown up. Every time I do your show, we get tons of tips. We've handed over 10 good ones, and I want to see that guy go down. And I don't think he's got enough guts to kill himself. That would be the right thing to do if he killed himself.
We've got the tip line up again for you, John, 833-378-7783. I'm going to connect you personally to Gabby Petito's dad after the show, John, and I'm very thankful of you appearing tonight, and thanks for the work you're doing, and good luck with your program tomorrow night as well. John's going to be covering this on In Pursuit tomorrow night on Investigation Discovery. Hopefully your tips out there, America, will help to find Brian Laundrie and find out what happened. Thank you, John Walsh. So appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you, Ashley.
Coming up after the break, there is so much more to this story. Like, what did the coroner find out when they started the autopsy process, when they began to discover what was there at the scene of the crime? There is so much that can tell you with regard to any kind of prosecution later. I'm going to speak to a forensics expert next on what Gabby's sadly lifeless body might tell us. Welcome back to our special coverage of the Gabby Petito investigation. There is a full-fledged manhunt underway in Northport, Florida, and maybe other places that we don't know about, for Gabby's fiancé, a person of interest in her disappearance, and probably at this point what may end up being a murder. We know it is a homicide. His name is Brian Laundrie, and he's out there somewhere. It's just a matter of how long it might take to find him. I'm joined by forensic scientist and DNA expert Larry Koblinski. He's a professor at John Jay College of Criminal Justice and the chair of the Department of Sciences. You know, with your forensics background, Larry, I wanted to ask you about something that was very particular in the place in Wyoming where Gabby Petito's body was found. The coroner left with Gabby's remains and then returned the next day and spent almost a whole day at the scene where they had discovered Gabby. And I wanted to know from your background what you think that means in terms of investigating what happened to Gabby.
Well, there are a number of crime scenes in this case. And of course, the primary crime scene is where the body was found. Now, my hunch is that they have a cause of death and that it may be something like blunt force trauma. Perhaps she was hit over the head with something. It could be something at the scene. The crime scene has to be fully investigated in any case for forensics, for trace evidence that might be important in the litigation. So I think the coroner already has a lot of information that has not been reported yet. And the crime scene is really the first place where it begins.
Well, what I'm curious about and concerned at the same time is, after covering Casey Anthony, where Kaylee had been missing for months and months in a wooded area where there were elements and there were animals, it became impossible to determine a cause of death for Kaylee. We don't have a perfect timeline for Gabby, but we know she was out in the elements, and we know that that is the wilderness and that there are grizzlies and other animals. So I'm just concerned about whether it's possible we may never have a cause of death because there may have been these other factors.
You are hitting it right on the head. We know that she was involved in a FaceTime communication with Nicole, her mother, on August 24th. The body was found just this past Sunday. So it could be that there was decomposition for just under 3 weeks. Now, normally there are five stages of decomposition, and it takes a certain time course. But we're talking about rugged terrain in the summer, in the heat, in the sun. And what those factors do, it promotes decomposition. It speeds it up. And, of course, the last stage of decomposition is skeletonization. Now, what does that mean? It means the soft tissue is gone. Now, I don't know how far the decomposition has gone because it depends on a number of factors. But when you get rid of soft tissue, you have less information and you may not have a cause of death. My suspicion is there is a cause of death. They know, I think the medical examiner, Brent Blue, knows what killed her. And I say that because he's declared a manner of death. Remember, the manner of death can be an accident, a suicide, homicide, natural causes, or something indeterminate. But the medical examiner or the coroner said it was a homicide, death at the hands of another person. So I strongly suspect that either visually they could see this on the body, perhaps if there is the skull may have fractures, and that may be the clue, or there may be some evidence in the neck structures, perhaps an indication
it's
of strangulation.
Distressing. I'll tell you, it's distressing because the last time we know that her mother spoke with her was August 21st, and her body wasn't found till September 19th. And so, you know, that's a long time. We don't know when her death happened. It's sometime in that, you know, but it could have been August 25th, you know, that was when she lost her life. But I do have this other question for you, not related to the scene, but related to the van. They've towed that van. They've combed that van for details, but they both lived in that van. So what on earth do you think they could possibly find in that van that could be helpful? I just have a minute left.
It's very complicated. I think they got the hard drive, and therefore they have some communications. And I think that, together with cell phone records, pinging of towers, they can determine locations of Brian Laundry. And because they're engaged to each other, they're in close proximity. Finding trace evidence on him from her or vice versa doesn't really tell you anything. You've got to find out that tells you something about the crime itself. So I think that's the reason why the coroner went back to the crime scene, to actually make that association between the killer and the victim, at looking for evidence at that scene. The time of death is crucial in this case. Of course, the prosecution's going to have to build a timeline. And I think that they brought in an entomologist, because after 3 days, the only way to establish the postmortem interval is through study of insects, the succession, the colonization. So I think they probably have a good estimate of the time of death.
It's distressing to hear it, but you are so right. There are so many incredible aspects of science that can help tell the story that this poor girl cannot tell for herself. But Larry, thank you for that. I'm going to call on you again as we learn more, because hopefully we're going to learn that cause of death, as you mentioned. And I sure hope they can certainly ascertain what it is, because that sure does limit a defense attorney's options for stories. So, Larry, thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
I'm going to turn the page now. For the second time in 2 weeks, Alex Murdoch is accused of trying to game the Lowcountry legal system with the help of his BFF. Straight ahead, a Lowcountry lawyer who is not a Murdoch BFF and who may just have found one hell of a smoking gun. Tonight, there are two kinds of legal documents swirling around the Murdoch saga. There are new ones, with more seeming to blow in by the hour, and there are old ones, dusty with age, hidden for years, that have just come to light. And when I say just, I mean today. Both deliver some blockbuster claims. First, a brand new lawsuit filed by a survivor of that 2019 drunk boating crash that killed that young woman, Mallory Beach. This lawsuit alleges that Alex Murdoch tried to keep his son, Paul, the driver of the boat, out of trouble, unsuccessfully, as it happened, by essentially tampering with one of the witnesses to the crash. That witness, and now the plaintiff, is Connor Cook, young man, one of the kids injured in the boat crash. The lawsuit charges, and I quote, defendant Murdoch negligently or intentionally instructed plaintiff Cook that everything would be all right, telling him to just keep his mouth shut and inform law enforcement he did not know who was driving the boat. In fact, he knew that Paul Murdoch was driving the boat. But that's not all. The lawsuit says defendant Murdoch encouraged and instructed plaintiff Cook and his family to retain attorney, wait for it, Corey Fleming. It's an important name. Hold that. He advised that Fleming would be the best attorney for plaintiff Cook in representing his interests in the criminal investigation. Now, Corey Fleming is a name that just keeps on coming up over and over and over and over and over again. He's Alex Murdoch's best friend. He's Alex Murdoch's college roommate. And he's Alex Murdoch's son, Paul's godfather. The lawsuit says, quote, at no time was a potential conflict of interest revealed or discussed with the Cook family. And plaintiff Cook was instructed to decline to be interviewed by law enforcement and direct all law enforcement inquiries to Fleming, Corey Fleming, best friend of Alex. Remember, lawsuits only give one side of the story, and we have not yet heard Murdoch's, but he's going to have to tell a lot of sides because he's facing a lot of lawsuits. As for Corey Fleming, here we go again. He also represented this woman and her sons. In fact, the family of this longtime Murdoch family housekeeper, a woman named Gloria Satterfield, who looked much older than her 57 years when she fell down the stairs at the Murdoch family residence in early 2018. Just last week, South Carolina decided to investigate Gloria's untimely death, as well as the insurance payout that, I don't know, it just never found its way to her children. It was supposed to, but they didn't see anything. And now, the family's brand new lawyer has gotten his hands on some court documents. And whoo, do they tell a story. They show exactly how much money the family was due. They show exactly how much money the family did not get. But as is the norm in Murdoch world, for every answered question, there are a dozen new questions. Eric Bland is that Satterfield brand new family attorney and my guest tonight. He's the one who found these documents just today. The motions and petitions that you've discovered, Eric, in Gloria Satterfield's settlement, they look like a smoking gun to some extraordinarily troubling legal behavior. For one thing, none of the documents was actually filed with the court, yet they were signed off on by a judge. I don't think I've ever seen that. Can you explain how that happened?
You can't run from the truth, and the truth in this case is stranger than fiction. This is the first case I've ever seen where a caption was changed, not on a signed court order. Alex Murdoch's name was taken off the caption of these settlement documents so that it didn't look like he was a defendant. These settlement documents were not filed with the court. There wasn't even a court term or number on them. And they indicated that the monies had to be paid to the personal representative, Chad Westendorf. They were not paid to Chad Westendorf. They were paid directly to Corey Fleming. And on the back, you'll see the settlement disbursement sheet. And our clients did not get $2.7 million, Ashley, which is an incredible amount of money. It took the efforts of not only Mr. Fleming in concert with Alex Murdoch. It had to take into consideration defense attorneys going along with this. You cannot get court approval for this without having an open hearing, a transcript, something that's filed of record. All this was done in darkness. It was done outside of the public sunlight on this. And I've never seen it. We have found the smoking gun. We've proven that $2.7 million of the $4.3 million of settlements was not paid to our clients.
And yet, Eric, strangely, as I look, can we put up that disbursement sheet again? It's that final sheet with all the math on it, as I like to say, and it's a lot of big numbers. So if you can read that, you can see the attorney's fees up high, $168,000 and $1.266 million. So the attorneys got the money, presumably, but that business on the bottom there, the total to beneficiaries, the 2.765, you're saying they never saw a penny. Where did that money go? Do you have an inkling as to where it is?
It went to Alex Murdoch. Corey Fleming and Alex Murdoch worked together, and they wrote a company out of Atlanta on that check called Forge. It was sent to a dummy P.O. box. Alex Murdoch opened up a bank account under the name of Forge. The check was sent to a P.O. box. He got the check, he cashed it, and he walked away with $2.7 million.
Do you think the money's still there, or do you think it's gone?
I don't know yet. We're certainly going to inquire from the bank, but a defendant to walk away, who's being sued with $2.7 million is unheard of. It's illegal. The law enforcement agencies are looking into this. I will chase everybody who had something to do with this and make them accountable.
And how are those kids doing? I mean, they certainly don't have their mother. That's awful. But they've been chasing this and trying to figure out what on earth happened. They were told by Alex Murdoch, I've got the guys for you. Corey Fleming, my best friend, who he didn't tell him was his best friend, he'll be the lawyer. And then this other guy, Chad Westendorf, he'll be the person of record. And then they don't get to even communicate about this whole case.
Well, fortunately, they had the courage to go to lawyers, and these lawyers then came to us. We're going to hold people accountable. We got them answers within 2 weeks. We believe we're going to be successful in getting them the money that they are due. It took a tremendous amount of courage to come forward and go against the Murdochs. They obviously felt betrayed. Now they have to worry about, how did their mother die? What happened? Who had a hand in that? They were told and led to believe that she died as a result of tripping over dogs and falling down the stairs. But obviously, Alex Murdoch's credibility is zero at this point.
Yeah, it's pretty low at this point, lower than the low country. Real quickly, I saw a judge's name signed at the bottom of that petition for settlement. I also saw that judge, Carmen Mullen. I saw her initials on the bottom of every page. And what I did not see was a docket number. What I did not see was a clerk of a court with an actual filing. Sometimes down the right-hand side of that page, it's in electronic red ink down the side of the page when it's officially filed with the court. What is the exposure right now of the judge in this case? Who? There it is. You can see the signature right there of the judge. What is the exposure for the judge in this case who might have just let all this happen?
Well, I'm not sure she let it all happen. She may have been misled by the attorneys who led her to believe that they were going to file this with the court and maybe correct the caption to make sure that Alex Murdoch's name was on there and actually put a court term so that the clerk of court would able to put it in a court file. I'm not going
to
say.
Don't you have to follow up? If you sign something, don't you have to follow up and say, let me see the final paperwork, guys?
It may have been the job of her law clerk, or she may have been told this was done and it wasn't done. Because it what has happened now is we know that lawyers were not doing what they should be doing, and they were too busy trying to steal money than following the rules.
It's just so unbelievable. And I can't even get to the most important part, which is that it might even be Medicare fraud, because they didn't even have money to pay for the $680,000 hospital bill that Gloria Satterfield...
They allocated $50,000 to that from a $4,300,000 settlement. Somebody's going to have to answer questions about that. You know, every day this case keeps peeling more onion. It peels open. We find things about how this happened.
Oh, Eric, it's just so remarkable.
Close to the vein.
Okay, well, I'm going to call you again tomorrow. It seems every day I have a conversation with you and the money goes up. I think we might be at the end of it now, but who knows? Eric Bland, thank you for being with us tonight. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me on.
And thank you, everyone, for being with us as well. Tomorrow on the program, we're going to hopefully have those results of the autopsy that might tell us cause of death for Gabby Petito. Stay with us here at News Nation. We'll see you tomorrow.